All right. Morning, everybody.
Good morning.
All right, cool. Over the last couple years, God's been teaching me a lot about having willpower and keeping faith in Him, even when it seems really hard to do, resisting temptation a lot. It's been my experience that whenever I don't do what God wants me to, I'll run in the wrong direction until I run into His clothesline. And I'll lay on my back for a minute as He looks down and said, "That was the wrong way. Get up and go back." And today, we're going to look at a couple different stories about guys who either had really good willpower and God loved them for it, or guys that didn't and therefore got the clothesline of God. All right. Our story starts in 2 Kings 21. Now, there's this king of Israel named Manasseh, and he was so evil. Manasseh, king of Judah, has committed these detestable sins. He has done more evil than the Amorites who preceded him and has led Judah into sin with idols. Therefore, this is what the Lord God of Israel says: I'm going to bring such disaster on you, Jerusalem and Judah, that the ears of everyone who hear it will tingle. It will stretch out over Jerusalem, the measuring line used against Samaria and the plumb line used against the house of Ahab. I will wipe out Jerusalem as one wipes a dish, wiping it and turning it upside down. I will forsake the remnant of my inheritance and hand them over to their enemies. They will be looted and plundered by all their foes, because they have done evil in my eyes and have provoked me to anger from the day their forefathers came out of Egypt until this day. All right, so that's the first bit. Manasseh didn't have any willpower at all, did tons of evil in the eyes of God. And his punishment was God just decided to punish all of Israel, wipe it off the face of the earth. A couple kings later, God let Babylon come in and completely destroy it, which brings us to the beginning of our story. In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord delivered Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand, along with some of the articles from the temple of God. These he carried off to the temple of his God in Babylonia and put the treasure in the house of his God. Now, this is, we see God's prophecy coming to bear. After a few kings, Nebuchadnezzar came in and destroyed all of Judah. And as they destroyed Judah, they took things with them, as God said he would. Now, this next part is going to introduce us to the heroes of our story, if you will. Let me just preface this by saying every time I read these first six chapters, it makes me feel like a worse person, because Daniel is so much, is like the most awesome person I've ever seen in my entire life. So it says, the king ordered Ashpenaz, chief of his court officials, to bring in some of the Israelites from the royal family and the nobility. Young men without any physical defect, handsome, showing aptitude for every kind of learning, well-informed, quick to understand, and qualified to serve in the king's place. He was to teach them the language and literature of the Babylonians. The king assigned them a daily amount of food and wine from the king's table. They were to be trained for 3 years, and after that, they were to enter the king's service. So I was reading this, and then it occurred to me, that means that Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were really handsome and really, really smart and much better than me. Which makes, give me a little bit of a complex. So now, among these were some from Judah: Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. The chief gave them new names: to Daniel, the name Belteshazzar; to Hananiah, Shadrach; to Mishael, Meshach; and to Azariah, Abednego. Now, I always thought it was weird that we always remember Daniel by his Hebrew name, but Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they get remembered by their Babylonian names. I thought that wasn't very fair, although to be fair, it's a whole lot catchier than... or their names even. What is it? Hananiah, Mishael, it doesn't even roll together like this does. So this is going to come to our first act of some major willpower. Daniel resolved not to defile himself with royal food and wine, and he asked the chief official for permission not to defile himself this way. What does that mean? Daniel pretty much did not want to eat meat or drink wine. He told the guard that he wants to eat fruit and vegetables and drink water. Now, that's already a strong sense of willpower for me, eating only fruits and vegetables and drinking water. Okay, but he goes on to say, Daniel then said to the guard, whom the chief official had appointed over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, please test your servants for 10 days. Give us nothing but vegetable to eat and water to drink. Then compare our appearance with that of the young men who eat the royal food and treat your servants in accordance with what you see. So he agreed to this and tested them for 10 days. Now, I want to take a moment here and stop and say that they weren't going to just eat fruits, vegetables, and water for 10 days. All right? Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were planning to do this forever. All right? The rest of their lives, I'm only going to eat fruits, vegetables, and drink water. All right? I probably couldn't have lasted just the 10 days. You know, that's very strong to me, having that amount of willpower, that desire to follow God in their mind, to not just do this thing that other people would consider as difficult for just 10 days, but for the rest of their lives. That's your mindset. I'm going to do this for the rest of my life. I don't care what these people have to say. You know, it's funny to me, I was thinking how I feel like constantly we get these reports in the media that say that, oh, we're realizing how good this fruit is for you and how good this vegetable is for you and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, well, I think people have known for like 4,000 years. It's been in the Bible, right? So in conclusion, at the end of 10 days, they looked healthier and better nourished than any of the young men who ate the royal food. So the guard took away their choice food and the wine and they were to drink and gave them vegetables and said, how mad would you be? Take away my meat. I get out of here. To these four young men, God gave the knowledge and understanding of all kinds of literature and learning, and Daniel could understand visions and dreams of all kinds. At the end of the time set by King Nebuchadnezzar to bring them in, the chief official presented them. The king talked with them and found none equal to Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. So they entered the king's service. In every matter of wisdom and understanding about which the king questioned them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and enchanters in the whole kingdom. Now, this is the important part to start with. Show our first example that God really loves having that willpower and faith in him. Because they had the willpower and faith, over time, God gave them the gifts that they needed to survive. That's the first important story. Now, we're going to move on to the next story. In chapter 2, King Nebuchadnezzar has a dream, and it really freaks him out. It's apparently a very graphic dream. For those of you who don't know, he has a dream where he sees a statue, and at the very top there's a gold, the next is silver, and the next is bronze, and the next is clay, and he sees a rock come and destroy it all. And so it freaks him out, and so he asks all of his magicians to come together and translate it for him. Under penalty of death, and it says, the astrologers answered the king. There is not a man on earth who can do what the king asks. No king, however great and mighty, has ever asked such a thing of any magician or enchanter or astrologer. What the king asks is too difficult. No one can reveal it to the king except the gods, and they do not live among men. This made the king so angry and furious that he ordered the execution of all the wise men in Babylon. So the decree was issued to put the wise men to death, and men were sent to look for Daniel and his friends to put them to death. Now, that's already pretty scary. You got to remember that at this point in time, Nebuchadnezzar does not know anything about God yet. And so Daniel comes to him and says, by the power of God, not myself, I'm going to interpret this dream for you. And he does. And because of that, King Nebuchadnezzar fell prostrate before Daniel and paid him honor and ordered that an offering and incense be presented to him. The king said to Daniel, surely your God is the God of gods and the Lord of kings and a revealer of mysteries, for you were able to reveal this mystery. Then the king placed in Daniel a high position and lavished many gifts on him. He made him ruler over the entire province of Babylon and placed him in charge of all its wise men. It also says that since Daniel was in charge of the wise men, he made Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego his, you know, go-to guys. See, this is another example of Daniel having faith in God and willpower to come through for Nebuchadnezzar. Now, this next bit is what we're starting to get onto, not being able, not having willpower, what God does to that. King Nebuchadnezzar, I don't think, is a very smart guy. Because even though he just said all this awesome stuff about God and how clearly he's so important, immediately following this, King Nebuchadnezzar made an image of gold 90 feet high and 9 feet wide and set it up in the plain in Dura in the province of Babylon. Then he summoned the satraps, prefects, governors, advisors, treasurers, judges, magistrates, and all other provincial officials to come up to the dedication of the image he had set up. So the satraps, prefects, governors, advisors, treasurers, magistrates, and all the other provincial officials for the dedication of the image that Nebuchadnezzar had set up, and they stood before it. Then the herald loudly proclaimed, "This is what you are commanded to do, O people, nations, and men of every language. As soon as you hear the sound of the horn, flute, zither, lyre, harp, pipes, and all kinds of music, you must fall down and worship the image of gold that King Nebuchadnezzar has set up. Whoever does not fall down and worship will immediately be thrown into a blazing furnace." Now then, I love God and all. And I'm not ashamed to admit that if this was thrown at me, I would be thinking about it a little bit. It's a very struggle thing to do, you know, to have that martyrdom. This is the choice that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego have to go through. Do I stick to my guns and face death, or do I hedge here and live? So it comes to the king's attention that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, when all this happens, refuse to bow down. And this part is very strong to me. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego replied to the king, "O Nebuchadnezzar, we do not need to defend ourselves before you in this matter. If we are thrown into the blazing furnace, the God we serve is able to save us from it, and he will rescue us from your hand, O king. But even if he does not, we want you to know, O king, that we will not serve your gods or worship the image of the gold you have set up." That, to me, it's not just they're saying God might save us, but even if he doesn't, we still have more faith and willpower to do the right thing. That, to me, is something powerful. That's the kind of willpower we need to embolden for ourselves to have. I would be so freaked out. It's not just that we believe God's going to save us. Oh, he might save us, he might not. Are we kidding? So next, Nebuchadnezzar heats up the furnace so hot that the men who led up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego to the temple were incinerated, just standing outside of it, and they throw them in. And then we know the story. Nebuchadnezzar says to his men, "How many did we throw in?" "Three." "Well, I see four, and one of them grows as bright as the sun." So he asks Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego to come out. And they come out and see that they are unharmed. And so now, once again, even though Nebuchadnezzar at the beginning of this failed a little bit, once again he says, "Praise be to the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent his angel and rescued his servants. They trusted him and defied the king's command and were willing to give up their lives rather than serve or worship any god except for their own God. Therefore, I decree that the people of any nation or language who say anything against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego be cut into pieces and their houses be turned into piles of rubble, for no other god can save in his way." Then the king promoted Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the province of Babylon. Once again, Nebuchadnezzar has fallen away from God, but then come back to him. Nebuchadnezzar, even in the beginning of chapter 4, it seems like he's finally turned his leaf. He's going to remember. He says, "How great are the signs and how mighty are his wonders. His kingdom is an eternal kingdom. His dominion endures from generation to generation." Seems finally that Nebuchadnezzar maybe has finally turned his tune and found the willpower of God. But he has another dream, and he tells Daniel, "These are my visions I saw while I was lying in my bed. I looked, and there before me stood a tree in the middle of the land. Its height was enormous. The tree grew large and strong, and its top touched the sky. It was visible to the ends of the earth. Its leaves were beautiful. Its fruit abundant, and on it the food was food for all. Under it the beasts of the field found shelter, and the birds of the air lived in the branches, and from every creature was fed. In the visions I saw while lying in my bed, I looked, and there before me was a messenger, a holy one, coming down from heaven. He called in a loud voice, cut down the tree and trim off its branches, strip off its leaves and scatter its fruit. Let the animals flee from under it and the birds from its branches, but let the stump and its roots bound with iron bronze remain in the ground and grass of the field. It's funny, I didn't keep this verse in there, but the next verse is Daniel saying, oh God, I wish God wasn't talking about you, Nebuchadnezzar, but he is. You are the tree, and God's going to cut you down because you are going to think that you're better than him again, and you will walk the earth. It says seven times will come around for you until you will walk the earth like a wild animal until you recognize that God is God. And it just doesn't happen. Just a little bit later, Nebuchadnezzar thinks it will never happen until he was walking through his garden and he said, is not the great Babylon I have built as a royal residence my mighty power and for the glory of my majesty? The words were still on his lips when a voice came from heaven. This is what is decreed for you, King Nebuchadnezzar. Your royal authority has been taken from you. You will be driven away from people and will live with the wild animals. You will eat grass like cattle. Seven times will pass by you until you acknowledge that the Most High is sovereign over the kingdoms of men and gives them to anyone he wishes. This is an example of God talking to someone who continually doesn't use his willpower and faith. This is the first clothesline, if you will. We finally, God had had enough. It wasn't just, God doesn't just keep giving you a little bit of signs when you're going down the road the wrong way. He hits you with the clothesline. He gives you something that is big, that's going to make you realize, this is not where I was supposed to go. Eventually, King Nebuchadnezzar does see the error of his ways, and he finally starts to follow God. However, his son, Belshazzar, not to be confused with Daniel's name, Belteshazzar, also angers God. King Belteshazzar gave a great banquet for thousands of his nobles and drank wine with them. While Belshazzar was drinking his wine, he gave orders to bring in the gold and silver goblets that Nebuchadnezzar, his father, had taken from the temple in Jerusalem, so that the king and his nobles, his wives, and his concubines might drink from them. This part actually kind of makes me laugh, because at first we read that God said that he wanted to wipe Israel off the face of the earth and that everyone would take their stuff. He's like, okay, yeah, you can take my stuff, but you can't use it for that. You know, because immediately after this, God is so angry with Belteshazzar, he comes down and with a ghost hand writes words on a wall that no one can understand or read. And this makes the king real freaked out. Well, his wife remembers Daniel and how much he helped Belshazzar's father, Nebuchadnezzar. Now, so he calls in Daniel and tells him, hey, do this for me. Tell me what it says, and I will clothe you in purple. I'll give you a gold necklace. I'll make you the third highest ruler in the kingdom. And Daniel says, well, forget that. I don't need that. I'm going to tell you anyway. And this is where Daniel famously translates, the inscription that was written is Mene, Mene, Tekel, Parson, and this is what it means. Mene, God has numbered the days of your reign and brought it to an end. You have been weighed on the scales and been found wanting. Your kingdom is divided and given to the Medes and the Persians, Tekel and Paris. Then at Belshazzar's command, Daniel was clothed in purple. A gold chain was placed around his neck, and he was proclaimed the third highest ruler in the kingdom. That very night, Belshazzar, king of the Babylonians, was slain, and Darius the Mede took over the kingdom at the age of 62. This is a split decision, where on one hand, Daniel, having the willpower and faith, once again is given favor by God. He's made the third highest ruler in the kingdom, whereas at the same time, Belshazzar didn't have the faith and willpower of God and was immediately struck down. Now we continue with our final, this is the final part. One of the biggest things, one of my favorite parts in the Bible. Now, Darius is king, and with three administrators over them, one of whom was David, the satraps were made accountable to them so that the king might not suffer loss. Now, Daniel so distinguished himself among the administrators and satraps by his exceptional qualities, the king planned to set him over the whole kingdom. Now, this is a point where Daniel undergoes a little bit of jealousy, some guys who are not content for that to happen. They think that they want to be on the same side as Daniel. Daniel, because he's been blessed by God, is getting a little bit more favor than these guys, and so they immediately plot to have him killed. The royal administrators, prefects, and satraps, advisors, and governors have all agreed that the king should issue an edict and enforce the decree that anyone who prays to any god or man during the next 30 days, except to you, O king, shall be thrown into the lion's den. Now, O king, issue this decree and put it in writing so it cannot be altered in accordance with the laws of the Medes and the Persians, which cannot be repealed. So King Darius put the decree in writing. In this sense, they have tricked both Daniel and King Darius. And it says that Daniel was very afraid, and rather than not disobey this law, which essentially said that for the next 30 days, people were only allowed to pray to King Darius, Daniel immediately went and prayed, God, what do I do? That's some crazy faith to me. He didn't even think of the consequences. The consequence being that you had to be thrown into a lion's den and be ripped apart. Of course, this is what the other administrators were waiting for, and they went and arrested him. King Darius tried his best to secure Daniel's passage, but as it said, that once he's passed a law, no Greek can be unpassed. And so, the whole night, Darius was upset that he thought Daniel was dying, and it says that the next day, at the first light of dawn, the king got up and hurried to the lion's den. When he came near the den, he called to Daniel in an anguished voice, Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you serve continually, been able to rescue you from the lions? Daniel answered, O king, live forever. My God sent his angel, and he shut the mouths of the lions. They have not hurt me because I was found innocent in his sight, nor have I ever done any wrong before you, O king. The king was overjoyed and gave orders to lift Daniel out of the den. And when Daniel was lifted out of the den, no wound was found on him because he had trusted in his God. And at the king's command, the men who had falsely accused Daniel were brought in and thrown into the lion's den along with their wives and children. And before they reached the floor of the den, the lions overpowered them and crushed all their bones. That's a pretty rough way to go. I share all these stories with you today because, like I said at first, with my experience, in my experience, every time I face any temptation in my life, it will go one of these two ways. Either I will do the wrong thing, and I'll run smack into a wall. Something bad might not immediately happen, but it will later. Whereas, if I have that faith and willpower, I stick to my guns, something bad might immediately happen. I might get threatened with a burning furnace or a lion's den. But God will work it out for good. And so, I have a couple questions. Or a few questions, I should say. Just ask yourself, are you struggling with temptation? And if so, are there any signs that God is hitting you in the face? And how long is long enough until you admit and change for the better? Before I go, I want to remember that out of all this, King Darius wrote to all the people and nations in every language throughout the land, may you prosper greatly. I issue a decree that in every part of my kingdom, people must fear the reverence of the God of Daniel. For he is the living God and he endures forever. His kingdom will not be destroyed. His dominion will never end. He rescues and he saves. He performs signs and wonders in the heavens and on earth, and he has rescued Daniel from the power of lions. And every time you're afraid or don't know what to do or feel like you're going to lose it, just remember that God is eternal and that he can shut the mouth of the lion for you to save your life.